is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Big piece of information just released in the Alec Murdaugh case, the psychological breakdown of Brian Koberger that was done by the defense. What did they find? What, basically, what is wrong with this guy? That's what we're going to try and answer for you today, now that this new piece of information has come out. I'd love to get your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. I will say this, having gone through it a bit, it makes sense. It makes sense in all the ways that Brian Koberger is incapable of seeing. I think that's the interesting way of looking at this, because it describes him to a T in all the ways that he does not see himself, in all the ways that that ignorance, that inability to self-reflect so evidently shows up in people with his personality type. Such an inner frustration, an inner rage, frustration, contempt for the outside world because of how his brain simply is not compatible with it. And on folks that don't go and do these horrible sort of things, folks who are just trying to struggle to get through life, folks like Brian Koberger prior to what he did, prior to going to that length, which is a lot of people. That's most people with these sort of conditions don't go this far. They live very, you know, frustrated lives. And you almost have some empathy to a certain extent of like, if you could just see things this way. And that's the sad and scary part with folks like this, is they can't. If they could just, yeah, dot, 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 life would be so much easier. But at certain points in life, once you've gone so far, you know, the dog ain't going to learn no tricks. It's just who the dog is. Not everybody is capable of everything. The neuropsychologists noticed it almost immediately. Brian Koberger had a restricted range of facial expression. That's where we begin. Stoic at baseline, his social smiling was either inconsistent or absent. He furrowed his eyebrows during casual conversation, which Orr noted contributed to awkward engagement. His speech cadence was atypical. He lacked descriptive or empathic gestures, or described his interaction style as having poor reciprocity, meaning he very frequently refocused conversations back to his own experiences. She noted reduced social quality at times without awareness, primarily through matter-of-fact comments or directives. When she prompted him during a cognitive test with anything else, he answered firmly, "I'll tell you when I'm done." He carried jokes past the point where anyone was still engaged. He violated testing rules and rushed through tasks, or described an occasional intense gaze. Dr. Rachel Lawson Orr, a board-certified neuropsychologist, spent 3 months with Koberger across 6 sessions ending in February 25. Defense attorney Ann Taylor hired her to block prosecutors from classifying Koberger's mental health conditions as death penalty aggravators. The evaluation was never presented to a jury. It was now unsealed just this last week in August of 26. The legal context is not the story here. What Orr found inside that evaluation room is the story, because every behavior she documented is something the public has been watching for 3 years. Orr diagnosed Koberger with 4 current conditions: autism spectrum disorder level 1, OCD, ADHD, and ARFID. ASD level 1 means high functioning with no intellectual or language impairment, but it carries difficulty reasoning social cues and rigid fixed thinking patterns. Orr wrote that Koberger has met the criteria for ASD since childhood, and that's not a convenient diagnosis given his legal situation. A separate neuroimaging analysis of Koberger's brain conducted by Dr. Luny supported the diagnosis. The unsealed evaluation adds four more conditions from his past. Developmental coordination disorder, which affects motor skills, and unspecified depressive disorder, anorexia nervosa, and opioid use disorder. The opioid disorder is tied to a heroin addiction Koberger developed as a teenager. Orr described it as in sustained remission. Orr also documented the visual snow syndrome, that rare neurological condition where the visual field is permanently clouded by static-like flickering. Koberger began experiencing it at 14. It never went away. 8 diagnoses across a lifetime, and none of them operate alone. OCD means intrusive, repetitive thought loops that cycle without resolution. ADHD means impulsivity without pause, action before the brain catches up with the consequences. ARFID in adults often maps into broader rigidity about environment and control. Stack them all together, and you get a person who thinks in straight lines, misses social signals, acts before reflecting, and loops back to the same fixed positions. That's not a theory about Koberger. That's what Orr documented in the evaluation room. Behavior by behavior across 6 sessions. Koberger was describing this exact pattern about himself at 16. Between 2009 and 2012, a user attributed to Koberger posted 118 times in a visual snow syndrome form under the username XR. A person who knew Koberger confirmed to ABC News that the post matched complaints Koberger made during that period. The posts have not been formally authenticated in court, but I think it's safe to say it was Brian Koberger. In May of 2011, the user cataloged his own symptoms: depression, no interest in activity, constant thoughts of crazy thoughts, delusions of grandeur, anxiety, poor self-image, poor social skills, no emotion. He described how the condition changed him at home. When I get home, I'm mean to my family. The post continued, I felt no emotion, and along with the depersonalization, I can say and do whatever I want with little remorse. 2 months later, the user described what depersonalization felt like from inside. Human interactions felt like, quote, playing a role-playing game. Hugging his family and looking into their faces, I see nothing. It's like I'm looking at a video game, but less. Another post, the user wrote, my mind is never not on visual snow, and I always wonder what a normal person would be doing while I sit there and suffer. In April of 2011, asked about possible benefits of visual snow, the user replied, I've become very deep and determined on goals. It made me smarter. A teenage boy describing his own disconnection from other people found a way to frame it as an advantage. The pattern Orr would clinically confirm 14 years later was already forming. Rigid self-focus, grandiosity, layered over isolation, and zero awareness that other people experienced him differently than he experienced himself. The forum posts are a teenager's version of the same evaluation. The clinical language hadn't arrived, but the portrait was already drawn. Koberger's parents and 2 sisters sat for multiple interviews with Orr. They described what they'd been watching for years: deficits in nonverbal communication, limited facial expressions, rigid thinking, trouble coping with changes in routine. They told Orr they'd spent years providing extensive social coaching and direct behavioral feedback. They tried to show him what he couldn't see about himself. They tried to teach him how other people read his face, his tone, his silences. Orr's conclusion about all of the effort, it did not work. The family saw the pattern. They named it for Orr in clinical interviews. They've been intervening for years before Koberger was arrested, before any legal strategy existed. Koberger disclosed in a separate filing that his mother, father, and sisters were present for most discussions about the plea deal he now calls coercive. The same family that spent years trying to reach him sat in those rooms. What the family described to Orr wasn't a sudden change. It was a lifelong gap between how Koberger experiences himself and how other people experience him. The coaching wasn't about manners or social graces. It was about the most basic human skill there is, seeing yourself the way other people see you. Orr's central conclusion about Koberger is the clinical name for what everyone can see but him. Overall, poor insight, with only moments of fleeting acknowledgement when explicitly challenged to consider his role in certain situations. Every public behavior maps onto that finding. The flat affect in the courtroom, the handwritten petition blaming his attorneys for his own guilty plea, the New York Times interview in which he described his confession as hinged on by false promises and blatant disinformation, the 16-year-old who wrote, "I can say and do whatever I want with little remorse," is the same man whose own expert found he can't see his own role in situations. Sound like anybody who murdered four people? Pro-burgers? It just doesn't seem like he could do that. Oh, it does. Oh, but it does. He seems like the exact type of person who could do this sort of thing. I have a theory about some of the Probergers. Not all of them, but some of them. And I'm sure some of them are watching right now. This is going to hit home, and it's going to strike a nerve real quick. I have a feeling a lot of them see themselves in Brian Koberger. Ooh, did that hit home to some people? Did that that sting? Feel a little, that just doesn't, whew. If it's stinging, it's true. If you're like, I don't think so, then it probably isn't. But if you're feeling a visceral response to that statement, yeah. Maybe people see him not necessarily as themselves in Koberger, not necessarily as, you know, killers. But I mean, there is an element of the underdog to Brian Koberger. There is an element of, it's almost like an injured pet. You feel bad. Like, I wish if only it could see the way to not go through much struggle, go through so much self-inflicted struggle, but it can't. If he hadn't committed those crimes, I agree. He is kind of a sad figure. I mean, and there's a lot of people that are out there that live like this and live in this odd void of lack of emotion. And they can't do anything about it, but they're not out there killing people. And I think it's easy to have empathy there. But he's not them because he did this. And it's easy to go down that road of empathy thinking that. And then you get to the brick wall of, but he did all this. So that kind of goes out the window at that point. The diagnoses don't create blindness on their own. Stacked together, they build a mind that operates on rails. Rigid, impulsive, self-referencing, cycling back to fixed positions, making decisions. This is not psychosis. This is the operating system. The insight finding locks the door. He can't see out. Every interaction confirms what he already believes. But the problem is everyone else. Understanding the recipe is not excusing what he cooked. Koberger pled guilty under oath to the murders of Madison Mogan, Kaylee Gonzalez, Zana Kernodle, and Ethan Chapin. He admitted he killed four people. The diagnoses explain how he processes the world, not whether he's responsible for what he did in it. But the evaluation answers a question the public has carried since November of 22. How does a person do what he did and then believe the way he's behaved? The rigid me against the world posture from a man serving four consecutive life sentences. Look at the petition. He named the attorneys who spent years on his defense and called them incompetent. He told the New York Times they fed him false promises and blatant disinformation. He wrote that actual guilt was not an important factor in the plea deal. Every sentence in the petition reads like a product or described. Rigid framing, self-focused narrative, no acknowledgement that the other side of the table saw it differently. The petition is the evaluation in real time. The man whose family spent years coaching him through social interactions wrote a 20-page handwritten filing from a maximum security cell. He claimed that three experienced attorneys conspired to trick him into telling the truth. His own evaluator had already documented his inability to see his own role in situations. The petition proves her right. The Gonsalves family called him the mosquito you just seem to not be able to swat. They said they would have preferred a death penalty trial and believe fully in the evidence against him. That description is instinct and frustration, not clinical language. But it identifies this same loop or documented the man who keeps doing the same thing, incapable of seeing why it doesn't work, incapable of adjusting. Koberger has been running the same play from every position he's held since his arrest. The position changes, the play never does. Aubrey Gonsalves was 16 when her sister Kaylee was killed. She broke her silence after the petition was filed. She wrote, "For him, this may be another legal filing. For me, it's another day without my sister." His family tried for years. His evaluator documented it across 6 sessions in 3 months. He's still doing it from a cell at Idaho Maximum Security Institution, writing petitions in his own hand, convinced that everyone around him is the problem. The pattern or documented hasn't changed. The evaluation says it can't, and it won't. Madison Mogan, Kaylee Gonsalves, Zanner Kernodle, and Ethan Chapin are still gone. The man convicted of killing them still can't see his own role in anything. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. Love for you to weigh in over there. And if you've not done so yet, take the podcast with you. We're on YouTube, obviously, if you're watching us right now. But if you're watching us, you also now see up in the corner of the screen, there's this QR code. Just scan it with your device if you're able to. And take the podcast along with you. Then you can listen to our commentary, our updates, our coverage of all the stuff in audio form, you know, in the car, at work, on the beach, wherever you want to listen to today's best variety of continuous true crime for your work day. A better mix from the 80s, 90s, and today. A little bit of radio there for you. Anyway, do check it out. Hit that QR code and hit subscribe on the podcast platforms. It helps us out a lot. We do greatly appreciate it. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.